so let's enjoy the safari. Rose gave her older sister a dirty look, but she didn't answer. She screwed the lid back on her water flask. Then Reeve hissed suddenly, "Get back behind the stone columns! Fast!" Chapter 7. It was the first time Rose had ever heard Reeve Panzoro say anything that sounded like a command rather than a protest. She swung around to look at him. He grabbed her by the elbow. The jolt made Rose let go of her flask. Before she could pick it up, Reeve was dragging her away from the beach toward the shelter of the rock formations. "Hey, wait. Just get under cover." With his other hand, he gave Paige a push as well. In Reeve's voice, there was something so urgent and so terrified that neither one of the Tico sisters argued with him. All three of them ran for the protective camouflage of the volcanic columns. When they'd nearly reached the tall rock formations, the terrain underfoot became more uneven. Rose looked back over her shoulder. There was another ship approaching the beach. Rose couldn't be sure, but it didn't look to her like the one that had been chasing them the night before. This one seemed a lot bigger. It was skimming low along the surface of the Yellow Sea, but not close enough to damage its hull, just the way Paige and Reeve had been flying when they'd first arrived on a Terra Bravo. But it rode closer to the surface than Paige and Reeve had, because the water of the sheltered bay was so still. It was an enormous ship. It wasn't a privately owned launch or even a police cruiser. It was a big freighter or a transport of some kind. There wasn't room for it to sit down on the beach, but it hovered closer and closer over the bay, almost as if it were about to land there.
"Get back! We're dead if someone sees us!"
panted Reeve. They were among the towering pumice formations, but the columns weren't close enough or wide enough to hide them completely.
"We'd better stop moving," Reeve said, suddenly, in a low voice.
The three of them crouched low, wedging tightly into a cluster of tree-like tilted rocks that leaned against each other at the top, forming a sort of cave. Paige knelt, and leaning with her elbows against a stone, focused on the approaching ship through her macro binoculars.
"What is it?"
Rose asked.
"Death transport," the young Ateran pilot gasped. "They do sweeps to gather people up."
The ship's repulsor lifts grew louder as it crept dangerously near to the surface of the acidic bay. Rose raised her own macro binoculars to her eyes to get a better look, fascinated and horrified as a wide, ramp-like hatch yawned open on the hovering transport. Rose could see half a dozen First Order stormtroopers wearing the menacing white armor that was so similar to that of the former Imperial stormtroopers. They struggled with crates and pulleys and other equipment at the entrance to the transport.
"What are they doing here?" she whispered to Reeve. "You said off-worlders stay away from this part of the planet. And what did you mean?"
"Death transport." "I said the pumice forest was safe," Reeve answered distractedly. I meant our world is safe. I mean it used to be safe. This transport is full of dead prisoners. They gather people up and fly them into orbit, but their holding cells aren't atmospherically controlled, so the prisoners die in space. Then they dump them off in our oceans."
Reeve swallowed before he continued.
"It's an easy way to dispose of bodies. They've got a couple of big transports they keep on a Terra Alpha, and they bring them over here and round people up. It's the perfect place to get rid of the evidence. The acid sea doesn't leave much behind."
Rose wondered if he'd seen this happen before. Then she wondered how many times he'd seen it happen. Reeve gulped again. He was no longer watching. He whispered,
"Miss Casca thinks..."
Reeve coughed and corrected himself.
"We think they might be bringing prisoner transports here from other systems, too. It's just so easy to get rid of people here. And then there's no trace of what's happened to them."
Even through her macro binoculars, Rose couldn't tell what was being tipped out of the massive container that had shunted forward through the hatch of the transport. The angle was wrong, and she didn't really want to confirm Reeve's story with her own eyes, anyway. But it seemed pretty obvious that he wasn't making it up. Reeve was crouched with his face turned aside. They haven't used this part of Firestone before, he said. They don't always land in the same spot. Paige answered quietly. Let's hope they haven't raided your settlement. It wasn't the large-scale destruction of a city or a planet, but it was murder, all the same. Sick at heart, Rose didn't want to watch the ship anymore. But just as she started to lower her macro binoculars, her eyes were drawn from the transport to the beach. She'd spotted a small thing that stood out against the porous rock. It was her water flask. Rose's mouth felt dry just looking at it. She swallowed. Silently, she cursed Reeve for making her drop the flask in the first place, and then she cursed herself for failing to pick it up right away. If anyone on the transport noticed it... Rose gazed through the macro binoculars again. No one was looking toward the shore. The stormtroopers closest to the end of the ramp were hosing down the now empty container. They wore thick, lightweight armor that seemed to be treated with some kind of protective coating to withstand splashes from a Terra Brava's acidic sea. Suddenly, Rose saw Reeve, appearing much closer through the telescopic lenses than he actually was, darting forward, across the open beach. For 20 seconds, he was completely vulnerable, moving in plain sight, out in the open, in front of the First Order death transport. He ran hunkered down, bent low, as near to the ground as he could get without crawling. What is he doing? Paige gasped. Reeve grabbed Rose's water flask. He looked up quickly through his own macro binoculars toward the hovering transport, checking to make sure no one had noticed him. No one had. They were still working on cleaning out the container. Reeve crept backward toward where Paige and Rose were still hidden. He went more carefully now than he had when he'd so quickly darted forward. He stared through the macro binoculars as he moved, keeping his eyes on the transport. Rose held her breath. Made it! Reeve panted, slipping back into the protective shadow of the rock formations. He held out Rose's flask to her. You should have waited! She hissed. They're nearly done! They'll leave in a minute! It was a time bomb lying there. When they finished, they always make a low pass to patrol the area in case someone's seen them. They'd have spotted it for sure, and then they'd have dropped someone out to do a search. Especially after that chase in the dark last night. They're bound to make the connection. But if they'd seen you now, they'd have just got me. He drew in a ragged breath. You two might have been all right. Paige stared at him, frowning. Reeve was good at running away, but Rose could hardly believe he'd jumped forward into danger like that. It seemed completely out of character to her. She spoke aloud what she knew her sister was thinking. You're either very, very brave, or very, very stupid. Reeve shrugged. I know I'm not brave, but I'm not stupid either. It was just what I had to do, right? It was my fault in the first place, and I knew the risks, and you didn't. So there wasn't really any choice. The wide hatch on the transport ship began to close up. Shh! Reeve warned. Sit close against the rocks and don't move. They're going to do their scan of the landscape now. The whole procedure had taken less than an hour. Less than an hour to get rid of the bodies of a few thousand people and completely wipe any trace of them from the face of the planet. With its doors closed, the transport rumbled slowly up and down the beach. Reeve had been right about them sweeping the area. By the time the ship had roared away into the sky, Paige and Rose and their guide were all thirsty again, as well as stiff and sore from having to crouch for so long among the rough and uneven rock columns. After a moment's hesitation, Rose passed her canteen to Reeve. He had his own canteen, of course, but this shared drink was a tribute. It was a tribute to what his world had suffered and was suffering, and to the danger he'd risked to save Rose and Paige a few minutes before. Reeve drank briefly, ceremoniously. He understood. Then he handed the canteen back to Rose and stood up. Well, come on, he said. What about our safari? They made it to Reeve Panzoro's settlement without encountering another ship, though they did see an assortment of craft crossing the sky while they walked. They traveled close to the pumice columns in case they needed to take cover again. The outer living quarters of the big settlement stood empty. The first sign of habitation that the Tico sisters saw in the Firestone Islands was a collection of domed, glittering, white saltstone huts with no one inside. Broken doors hung open, swinging gently in the sea wind, and empty water condensers trailed wires in the walled yards around the empty houses. The big settlement of Firestone Main Island had become a ghost town. "There are never any bodies," said Reeve. "When people die, we send them out to sea. It's clean. It's what we've always done." He choked. "But we don't murder them first." "Don't worry. We get you," Rose told him. There was an inner circle to the compound that was surrounded by a makeshift barricade. It was there that Reeve led Paige and Rose. The way behind the barricade was through a complicated system of tunnels beginning in one of the abandoned houses. The three of them were greeted as they emerged, with deep suspicion, by half a dozen gaunt and exhausted-looking people holding an assortment of deadly-looking weapons. Before anyone could challenge them, one of the Ataran fighters cried out, "Hold fire! It's Reeve! It's Reeve Panzoro!" A man and a woman not much older than Reeve rushed forward to hug him. Another, older man, kept a solar crossbow ready to fire. Three other seasoned-looking settlers held electric staffs that could clearly do some damage in a fight. There was no reason yet for these people to put their trust in Rose and Paige. "It's all right. It's all right," Reeve promised. "They're with me." "Where's Casca?" asked the man with the crossbow. "She's safe. We made it out. I'll tell you in a minute. She sent me with these..." He hesitated, struggling to come up with the right word, and Rose resisted a wild urge to put in, "Pirates." "Emissaries," Reeve came up with triumphantly. He gestured toward Paige and Rose with a glance into their faces. "These are Paige Tico, pilot, and Rose Tico, flight engineer, representatives of General Leia Organa. General Organa has connections with the New Republic Senate." He turned to Rose and Paige, with a sweep of his arm to indicate the local settlers. "And this is the Bravo Rising resistance team of Aterra Bravo. My uncle, Orion Chalk, the foreman of the big settlement hydro farm before it was taken away from us, Daris Rontorovo. And this is the chief instructor from the Firestone Technical Academy, Tanya Helios." The chief instructor of the Technical Academy stepped forward. She held out her hand to Paige, and then to Rose. "Thank you. Thank you for being here." Daris, following Tanya, shook their hands as well, but didn't say anything. He seemed too choked up to speak. Paige and Rose gave each other sideways glances. After what they'd seen that day, there wasn't any doubt in their minds. They knew they would do whatever they could to help these people. Chapter 8. Paige was worried about the big settlement's desperate lack of water. She didn't want to have to count on the Firestone Islands to provide for her or Rose when the Aterans clearly could barely manage to provide for themselves. So she agreed to stay with them one day only, and they had to make plans right away for how the Resistance could help them. The assembly was Reeve Panzoro's idea. Bravo Rising called a group meeting in a covered market area in the center of the settlement. They held it in the evening to allow time to send messengers several kilometers across the landscape on pedal-powered Velo flyers. There was next to no fuel for generating power in the Firestone Islands anymore. All the solar and wind power went toward condensing and recycling water. Any other fuel was hoarded for Bravo Rising's weapons and their small fleet of starfighters, stolen or borrowed from Aterra's disbanded security forces. Rose and Paige and their pilot guide sat in the center of the wide atrium as the focus of the gathering, along with Orion Chalk. Rose wondered if they'd have to make a speech to the people there. This was not something she felt confident about. She didn't think Paige did either. But Reeve Panzoro, running on adrenaline, was proving himself fiercely in control. "We need a plan to take back to General Organa," he said. "A specific plan. Miss Casca's convinced Leia to give us help, and the General has sent Paige and Rose as her emissaries to work out how they'll get through the blockade and where they should land." "Slow down. You just blasted from zero to light speed," Rose protested. "We're only here to make sure your story's true. And if it is, Leia might be able to send support. You know it's true, Reeve insisted. You saw the death transport. And now that you're here...
Now that we're here, it's clearer how we can help, Paige said. We can offer you a plan.
Rose backed her up, teasing. Paige likes to plan parties. Sure I do, said Paige. The old lady had a suggestion that would work. We can use the Star Fortress bombers to make supply runs here.
Rose, remembering what Fossil had said, agreed. We wouldn't even have to land. We could send loaded shells in as a drop to a few designated sites.
She turned to look at Paige. We could rig other Star Fortresses with power bafflers like the one in Hammer. If we got other people besides me working on it, we could set them up pretty quickly. It's not hard to do. It's just tedious wiring up all the circuits. Those asteroids in the Aterra Belt mean it's really easy to stay out of sight. And if all the bombers get their power covered up, we should be able to come and go pretty safely.
Just as long as we don't run into too many of those automatic cannons, Paige reminded her.
But we can help with those, said Orion Chalk, Reeve's uncle, the one who'd threatened them with the solar crossbow when they'd first arrived.
We've mapped hundreds of them. Reeve Penzora's father was part of the team that works on that. And we can show you how to avoid the minefields.
The only thing is, it might have to be a very short party, Rose said, apologetically. She knew how slender the Resistance resources were, and she didn't think that Leia would be able to keep this blockade-running plan going for long. It was going to have to be an operation that enabled the Aterrans to mount their own defense, just as Casca Penzoro had suggested. Paige was thinking the same thing. What do you need most? She asked. All around her, voices began to speak up. She heard several different answers, but Rose could tell that the Bravo Rising Assembly was unanimous about one thing in particular.
Water!
What we need most is water!
Fuel, weapons, power to fight back. But we can't do anything without water. What we need most is water.
We've always farmed it ourselves on Bravo, explained Orion Chalk. But when the gas extraction industry began here, the population expanded so much that it's been hundreds of years since we've been self-sufficient in drinkable water. We count on shipments from Aterra Alpha. Since our water's been blockaded, at least half the planet has died. Quickly. It only took a week or two after the water started to run out.
Where do you get it now?
The Firestone Islands contain most of Bravo's hydro farms. Until the large ones were taken over by the First Order, we supplied water to townships all over the Northern Quadrant. We may not have access to those farms anymore, but several people in the big settlement are self-sufficient backyard water farmers. That's why Bravo Rising is centered here.
Chalk took a deep breath.
We've been smuggling water to other settlements, but we've barely got enough to keep the survivors alive. If we could take out the patrols that blockade this section, we'd be able to take back the main Firestone Island water supply.
We need to arrange drop points, said Paige. If you can provide us with those locations, information about the automatic cannons and minefields, and a list of other supplies that will help you pull off your defense, we can take those back to our crew and get this ball rolling within a week. We'll find a way to run through this blockade.
And suddenly, it looked like it was really going to happen. Paige and Rose were going to become blockade runners. Armed with information that all the probe droids in the galaxy could not have uncovered for them, Paige and Rose left late the following morning to head back to the Little Vixen. They'd expected Reeve to come with them. Reeve had expected to go with them. But apparently no one else had expected it.
Reeve Penzoro!
Orion Chalk stopped him in the middle of strapping up his pack.
You're not leaving, but you...
I've got to get back to Miss Casca, Reeve objected quickly. I've got to report to her.
The emissaries will report to her. That's what they came to do, to check out her story.
But we need you here. Without Miss Casca, you're the only Penzoro we've got.
But I...
Reeve sounded panicked. Rose could tell that he'd been expecting to be reunited with his grandmother the moment they returned to Dakar.
She's our leader, and you're her representative, said Chalk. Of course you're free to make your own decision, but I hope you'll stay. We need you here.
Reeve had been separated from Casca Penzoro forcefully. He hadn't chosen to leave her on Dakar. But now, he was being given a choice. Reeve's face twisted. He looked torn apart. But she thinks I'm coming back, he said.
You're our only link with this bomber group,
Chalk insisted.
They'll need you here as a contact. Your experience with their leaders and equipment will be vital to us if anything goes wrong with their mission.
Rose watched Reeve Panzoro with the familiar feeling of sympathy. She knew he was terrified of the blockade. He was terrified of dying of thirst, or worse, in this hostile place that had once been his home. She remembered the fearful relief on his face when he'd climbed out of the ship he'd crash-landed in the belly of the Star Fortress. But she knew that he was bolder and more determined than she'd taken him for when she'd first met him. She remembered how he'd come up with the ruse that had helped them escape the ship that was hunting them when they'd arrived on a Terra Bravo. She remembered how he'd run into the open on the pumice beach, risking his life to bring back her canteen so that the First Order transport wouldn't notice it. Rose kept her lips clamped shut. She couldn't blame him for being loyal to his grandmother. She knew that if she were Reeve and Casca were Paige, Rose would choose to go back to her sister every time. Rose saw now, uncomfortably, that this might not be the right choice. She didn't dare join in this debate, but Paige suddenly did. You're always thinking about your grandmother's instructions, she said to Reeve. What would she tell you now? Chalk turned to look at her with respect. Reeve, when he looked at Paige himself, still wore an expression of unhappy indecision. What would Casca want you to do? Paige asked in her calm, fearless, tail-gunner-under-fire voice. Reeve Panzoro swallowed. Then suddenly, he gave a sharp nod. She'd want me to do the job I was needed for. He paused. So would my father. Well then, Paige said with satisfaction. There you go. Reeve took a deep breath. He closed his eyes. Rose could imagine what he was thinking.
She's the only one I have left. If I do this, I might never see her again.
And then he made his decision, knowing that now he was going to be able to navigate new uncharted stars alone.
All right. I'll stay. I'll do it.
Nothing, Rose thought, is as peaceful as the limitless blue of hyperspace. She and Paige hadn't wasted any time getting out of the Atera system. They'd taken off as soon as they reached the Vixen, and before the end of a 24-hour time block, Rose and Paige were once again alone in the suspended reality following the jump to light speed. Paige leaned back in the pilot seat, stretching.
Wow.
What a terrible place.
Not really what we meant about seeing the galaxy.
She touched her Hazian ore medallion. Seeing Paige's fingers straying to her throat, Rose mirrored her sister's action. The familiar wave of love and connection washed over her. They were both touching a little bit of Automach at the same time. Two halves that made a whole. A reminder of the cause they were fighting for, and a physical link to their lost home.
Do you think there is any place out there that's beautiful and...
Rose paused. She'd been going to say peaceful, but it didn't really seem to be the right word. Without human habitation, a Terra Bravo would have been a place of beauty and peace. But adding people into the mix changed it completely.
And what?
A good place for a picnic, Rose said. Never mind. There must be somewhere. It was a stupid question. Paige set the autopilot. Hyperspace was a relief after a Terra. She stood up in the little cabin and unrolled a couple of blankets. She grinned at Rose.
Hyperspace is beautiful, said Paige.
And we can picnic right here. She spread out the blankets and arranged the insulated mug and protein packets as if she and Rose were galactic nobility on a feast day. Come on, Rose. Sit down and let's look at the map. Let's plan our interstellar vacation.
You are ridiculous, Rose grumbled.
They wrapped up close together in the blankets, sharing each other's warmth. Right now, this was home. Rose had a sudden mental image of the pair of them, cocooned together all alone, surrounded by light years and light years of empty space, as if they were the only two people alive in the entire galaxy. Or at least, the only two people who mattered. But of course, there were a lot of other desperate people out there. As if to remind them,
Paige pulled up a miniature map of the Outer Rim.
Dakar is too far from Matera to make a regular series of supply runs efficiently, she said. We need to find a place to use as an intermediate base for the heavy bomber unit. Leia had a suggestion for a planet we could check out just in case. There. Paige pointed. Only a short hyperspace jump from Matera, there was a world on the edge of a mostly uninhabited star system. It was marked industrial and independent. Refnu, Rose read aloud.
How come Leia tells you all this extra stuff?
Insurance. If we're both caught, only one of us knows anything.
The implication made Rose shiver. That's not exactly reassuring, she said, uncomfortably glad to let her older sister take on the burden of being the one who risked having information tortured out of her.
In defense of her own secret selfishness, Rose said quickly, now we both know.
But we won't get caught, Paige said, squeezing Rose's hand. One of the other Star Fortress techs suggested it to us. He grew up on Refnu. Cat, the big guy.
You know which one I mean, the Bomber Treasure's flight engineer?
Anyway, Leia thinks that operating out of Refnu will be good cover. It won't be too far for our forts to go back and forth between Refnu and Atera. It's in a good position for us to load the supplies we'll need. And there's no real reason for anyone to trace the bombers back to Dakar or to the Resistance. It'll look like someone on Refnu is being a good neighbor to Atera.
Shall we stop in on our way home?
What, without even asking Leia? Or Fossil? Just drop in on a strange planet and say hi?
Traveling the galaxy together, Paige reminded her.
I've been given a pile of credits to negotiate some docking berths for the forts if we're going to go ahead with this.
Rose couldn't help laughing. Traveling with you is not turning out like I expected. But then, neither is the galaxy.
The galaxy's great, said Paige, and they both laughed.
Neither Paige nor Rose was prepared for the deep, agonizing homesickness that slammed them during their brief trip to Refnu. It wasn't exactly like Haze Minor in the Automox system, but it was the most like it of any place they'd been since they left home. Rose had felt a kind of fierce loyalty to the Ateras just because they were twin worlds. Now, she found herself feeling the same kind of loyalty to Refnu, because she understood it. Cold and dark, Refnu was as far out on the edge of its habitable zone as the Haze world had been. And, like Haze Minor, Refnu was barely warm enough to support life. The planet was so far from its sun that it existed in perpetual twilight. From the minute Paige set down their craft on the windy, frost-rimmed spaceport on Refnu, both she and Rose had felt as though they were finally coming home. They couldn't get out of their little resistance ship at first. They weren't dressed for it. After a bit of wrangling over the comm with someone who called himself the Harbor Master in a puffed-up way, a crane trundled over to them through the purple twilight and deposited a thermal dome over the Vixen so they wouldn't freeze to death when they climbed out. Then a couple of dock workers brought them weather suits. It was exactly the way a strange ship would have been welcomed on Haze Minor. Paige caught Rose's eye as they climbed into the weather suits and gave her a bright little, encouraging half-smile. Rose knew her sister was feeling the same sense of bittersweet nostalgia. Life had never been easy on Haze Minor, but that was no reason for it to be destroyed. Paige and Rose spent only one night on Refnu. They weren't exactly welcomed, as they'd been on Atera Bravo. They had to rent their weather suits by the hour and pay for a bunk in the freighter's barracks in order to stay on the planet's surface. It seemed strange to be back in a place where paying for services from strangers was a normal thing to do. Leia's new Republic credits were welcomed, and Paige reluctantly spent them. The weather suits and a place to sleep were necessities if they wanted to survive the harshness of Refnu's climate. But you can't just slap down a pile of cash and buy docking space for a couple of squadrons of heavy fort bombers, Rose pointed out to her older sister. Of course not. The Resistance can't afford it, for one thing, and for another, it would look incredibly suspicious.
So what are you going to do?
Intelligence?
Paige laughed.
Reconnaissance. I said we'll negotiate.
Remember my job back home on Haze Minor?
You were not a diplomat, Rose reminded her. You were an ore digger pilot for the Central Ridge Mining Company.
I bet they need icebreakers here, too, just like they did on Haze Minor, Paige said. And I bet they wouldn't say no to an experienced bomber squadron who could do it for them. I think we should go eat supper with the other freighters. Chapter 9. It reminded Rose so much of Haze Minor that it made her chest hurt. She thought she could actually feel the heartache. The freighter's canteen was a long, windowless hall bright with artificial daylight. There were no windows, just like home. In a world where it was always dark and almost always stormy, windows were pointless. The light from the plasma ceiling reminded Rose piercingly of the heart of her family living pod, the tiny bright space the Tikas had called the sunroom. Every residential space on Haze Minor had been equipped with a sunroom of some kind. The artificial light was necessary to sustain life.
A snow grapevine! Paige gasped, pointing.
All this way to see a snow grapevine, Rose laughed. But she grasped her older sister's hand and squeezed hard. The vine was big. It must have been over 100 years old. It was a lot like the one that had twisted around the small domed space of their own sunroom. Every tiny sour fruit closely monitored by the pod superintendent, and any harvest shared across four communal kitchens. The old vine hadn't belonged to the Tikos, but they'd been the lucky family who got to sit beneath its pale green foliage and spicy blossoms. Its teardrop-shaped leaves echoed the shape of the pale gold medallions Paige and Rose wore and treasured, the matched gift from their parents just before they'd fled the Automox system. This vine in the freighter's canteen on Refnu was in a cage, precious enough to warrant protection from anyone who would carelessly or greedily disturb its carefully coaxed fruits. Paige and Rose picked up food trays at a serving hatch and managed to get seats at one of the long bench tables not far from the vine's green fragrance. When they sat down, Paige laughed in delight.
Look! Selicale!
In narrow trenches down the center of the table, pale sprouts were growing under the artificial light. Back on Haze Minor in the Automox system, Selicale had been a valuable vitamin source, but you had to strip the seeds from it and replant them daily or you'd have nothing to eat the next day. Here, you could help yourself and replant as you ate.
I like this place, said Paige happily, piling the bitter shoots on top of her steaming portion of starch rations and poking the seeds back into the soil trench.
The other travelers sitting nearby laughed at her enthusiasm.
You from around here?
Rumbled one of them, humanoid but gigantic.
But no, I don't think so. You're too small to be a Revenue native. Look at me, Dario the Nephrian. My extra skin layer keeps me warm, and my bones are bigger to hold the extra weight. Where are you from, then?
Automach, originally, said Paige. A planet called Haze Minor. Same climate. No native intelligent life there, though. This got another laugh.
Call Dario intelligent life? Teased another Nephrian. Well, you couldn't like the climate on this iceberg if you weren't used to it, that's for sure, said someone else.
Rose saw what Paige had done, attracted attention on purpose by making people interested in her story, but also by putting the strangers at ease right away. How does she do it? Rose wondered. And could I ever do it without her? Could I ever feel so confident on my own, not knowing any of these people?
What brings you to this dark snowball?
Asked a scaly, lizard-like humanoid sitting across from them, shivering in his weather suit with taloned hands wrapped around a hot mug.
Not the climate, for sure.
We're looking for work. Freelance ice bombers. We fly in a converted star fortress. Figured this place was as good as any, Paige said.
You've worked in frozen ore extraction?
Asked Dario, the big guy.
You're here at a good time. It's summer.
This brought hoots of laughter from the lizard person, who obviously wasn't from around these parts.
Summer!
Yeah, summer, you sunbug. That means the days are long up north, and you can clear the ice away from the surface for a little while so you can get to the minerals underneath.
What's your name, miss?
Paige. Paige Tico. This is my sister, Rose. The folk around the table nodded greetings.
I know that Refnu Corp hires extra workers this time of year, said Dario. Check in at their HQ. It's tunnel 1782, and you don't have to go outside to get there. I'm not sure one Star Fortress is going to be much good to them, though.
Oh, we're just the reconnaissance party, Paige said, grinning. Rose kicked her.
Paige didn't bat an eyelash.
We're here in advance of the rest of the crew, Paige said, checking out the lay of the land. What a waste of energy and time and fuel it would have been if we'd all flown out to the back end of nowhere and then discovered we couldn't get work. We can offer Revenue Corp a full squadron if they want it. Back on Dakar, Leia was cautiously enthusiastic about the Tico sisters' report. We can run 4 supply hops, she said firmly. She and a fellow resistance officer, Vice Admiral Amelin Holdo, were laying the groundwork for the mission with all the members of the heavy bomber unit. Fossil, 60 crew, and another 60 ground staff who would go along to Refnew to take over the refueling, maintenance, and loading work for the flight crews when they came back to base.
Holdo's had experience with airlift missions before, Leia explained. She won't be going along with you, but I've asked her to listen in on our plans.
Holdo was a serene woman of about Leia's age, thin and tall with purple hair. She was in command of the cruiser Ninka. She stood on one side of Leia while Casca Panzoro stood on the other side as their consultant. The 3 older women made a formidable trio. Leia had spent hours in private conversation with Casca and Holdo, but this was the first time their plans were being revealed. We can't afford to supply a Terra Bravo with more than 4 airlift runs, Leia continued. We don't have a contact on a Terra Alpha, and we'd better limit ourselves to communicating with Bravo Rising. We'll have to be careful about the timing, too. We don't want to attract a lot of attention. We can send 11 Star Fortress bombers in all, with 11 full crews. 7 of Cobalt Squadron will go, along with 4 from Crimson. That way, 6 bombers can head to a Terra and 5 can work for the Refnew Corporation each day. Finch Dallow of Cobalt will lead both squadrons to a Terra. Finch, you think you have a good idea of how to avoid the minefields?
Well, I hope so, said Finch.
That's the best we can do, said Leia. Are you all with me? She looked around, watching people nod their acknowledgement and understanding. Good, Leia said. So, Amelin, can you add to what I've said? We'll stock the bombers for the first 2 runs before you leave, and we'll send a transport with you with full clips of supplies for the 3rd and 4th runs, Holdo told them. You'll probably need to send the transport back here for your final fuel supply, but you'll be on your own, on Refnew. Try to juggle things so it doesn't look like you're racing off on a rescue mission in your spare time, okay? Leia added. Don't forget you're supposed to be icebreakers. One of the pilots raised a hand. Won't it be obvious what the rest of us are doing while the decoy squadron's busy mining?
Use a cover story, Leia told him, ever the diplomat.
You're making the most of your time and working a delivery service on your days off. Cat, the flight engineer on the bomber Treasure, knows the planet and the system. He's the reason you heard there might be work there. Leia paused and made a face at the questioner. Just don't make it obvious where you're heading, she warned. The next 48 hours evaporated in a whirl of preparations. Vice Admiral Holdo and Fossil consulted Casca Panzoro on what was most urgently needed in the bomber's payloads and in the supplementary supplies carried in the biggest transport available. The bomber crews supervised the ground crews and double-checked all the ship's equipment in preparation for the mission. Rose scarcely slept. She had the task of overseeing 11 teams as they wired up each of the Star Fortress bombers with power-producing bafflers like the one in Hammer. Come on, it was Paige's voice. Paige had found her sister sitting against the grass of the camouflaged bunker wall. Rose was in between power checks, taking a 5-minute break to rehydrate and breathe. Fresh air. The only way to get at the awkward power bafflers was by crawling underneath and sitting up inside them on the flight decks of the heavy bombers. It was claustrophobic at the best of times. With 2 people, Rose plus the flight engineer she was supervising, it was stifling. The Star Fortresses were on low power for ground maintenance, and it was stuffy and hot inside them. By the end of an hour, Rose had stripped down to her tank top, and that was drenched. The Automach medallion swung free and kept catching on the baffler plugs. Rose was glad of a break after a day of this. Paige snagged her by the arm where she was resting against the outside grass-covered wall of the bunker. Come on, let's take a quick walk. I haven't got time. I just wanted to get some air. If you've got time to sit there, you've got time for a walk, Paige said. It'll be dark soon anyway. You'll feel better if you get moving.
Rose let herself be led. The light was different late in the day than it was in early morning. The birds were quiet. On some planets, said Paige, where there's a huge variety of wildlife and they have big animals as well as little flying things, there are nocturnal animals too. What animal would you most like to see?
Anything, as long as I don't have to hurt it.
Rose didn't feel like playing this game, and the darkening trees seemed ominous to her.
I'd choose Fathiers, Paige said. If I could only see one animal in the whole galaxy, and I'd never get to see anything else, I'd go for Fathiers. I'd like to see them in a race. I'd like to ride one.
Paige, Rose interrupted, could you be quiet about animals right now? She shivered. Now that she was out in the open and could feel the wind on her skin, she was no longer sweating. She wished she'd put her overalls back on before she headed off duty. Paige laid her arm over Rose's shoulders and held her close.
I thought something was bothering you. What are you worrying about?
You always know.
For a moment they stood there, quiet together. It was getting too late now to go any further into the alien forest. But in another moment they'd have to turn back. And then there would hardly be any more time together until... when?
Until they were back in hyperspace on the way to another bombing mission, riding doubled up in the lower gun ball turret?
Okay, Rose said. Here's the thing. You know I'm supervising the installation of these power-reducing bafflers in the forts for this mission?
Well,
wiring them up is a pain, and I can't do it all myself. I have to go around and make sure that other people are doing the right thing, and mostly they are. Sometimes I see something that's out of place, and I point it out, and they fix it.
So what's the problem? Paige asked. Is someone being sloppy? Or aren't we going to be ready in time?
No, no, nothing like that. Everybody's working really hard, and we're ahead of schedule.
Rose shivered again.
Well, what then?
I'm worried the bafflers won't work, said Rose.
But ours worked fine.
Sure it did. Rose hesitated again, then finally managed to spit out what was bothering her.
But if one single plug were out of place, and it made the baffler in one of the other forts fail, and they got spotted by a TIE fighter patrol, it would be my fault if everybody on that bomber ended up dead.
Paige was silent. It was bad enough worrying about Reeve. Just one person, when we had to take him along. But this is me having to be responsible for the whole squadron. When a few more seconds passed and Paige still didn't say anything, Rose added brazenly, trying to brush past the moment.
Of course, if our baffler fails first, I guess I won't have to worry about...
Paige stopped her with one word.
Rose!
Rose didn't turn to look at her sister, ashamed of her own uncertainty. Ashamed of getting anything wrong when Paige was always so calm and controlled.
Rose, we're in this together, Paige said. If a pilot doesn't fly fast enough or doesn't get over the drop zone in exactly the right place, or the bombardier is a second late making the release, or the tail gunner doesn't hit every bandit she fires at, do we all sit around blaming them?
She began to walk back toward the base, steering Rose under her warm, familiar arm.
You know we don't, Paige continued. That's what it is to be a soldier. And we're at war. Maybe it's not a great big heroic intergalactic conflict like when the Empire was defeated. And maybe we're not at the center of it. But we're part of an effort. We're making a difference. And maybe we're going to give Atera a chance that Automach didn't get.
She squeezed Rose's shoulder.
And that's something that won't happen without taking some risks. Paige finished. Without taking some responsibility.
When Rose still didn't answer, Paige prompted her. Say I'm right. Rose gave a grudging little laugh.
You're always right, Pepe.
That's because I'm older and I know best.
Ha ha.
Rose knew that Paige was right. And yet, she also knew that if something went wrong with one of those power bafflers and Rose wasn't there to fix it herself, she was going to feel guilty about it for the rest of her life. It didn't take the Star Fortress unit long to get set up on Refnu. They wasted no more than a day working out a settlement with the Refnu Corporation for the wharf space and the icebreaking work. Then they readied the bombers for their first assignments and collapsed in their bunk space with the other temporary workers. Early the next morning, 5 of the 11 heavy bombers were fitted with bomb clips packed full of ice-breaking equipment. And they set off lumbering northward into Refnu's frozen ore zones for the work mission they'd promised Refnu Corp. The other 6 resistance bombers, 4 from the Cobalt Squadron, supported by 2 from Crimson, weren't carrying the MagnoCharge explosives. They were headed for the Atera system, and this time, instead of spy equipment, their bomb racks contained shell cases filled with thousands of liters of water, and portable condensers, vehicle fuel, flour, protein packs, tins of smoked cloudfish, vitamin supplements, and medical supplies, and an assortment of electronic and mechanical equipment, including several hyperdrive compressors for small ships, light-speed radio receivers, and energy cells for ammunition. The Star Fortress bombers carried the first delivery of an airlift that would give Bravo Rising the self-sufficiency it needed to fight for independence for the twin Atera worlds. Paige glanced at the chrono on her wrist. 10 minutes to real space. You need to be at the tech monitor when we enter the Atera system. Go poke Nyx and Spenny on your way.
Okay, Rose said.
See you again on the way back to Refnu. She said it casually, as if they weren't about to sneak 6 resistance star fortresses through a first-order blockade. Paige was equally casual. She gave the same response she always gave at the beginning of a bombing run. See you then, Rose. Rose boosted herself off the back of the gunner's seat and into the bomb bay. She closed the shield door to the gunner's turret behind her, sealing Paige in. Then Rose made her way up the long ladder past the bomb racks to the flight deck. Rose shivered all over again as she climbed past the thousands of black and shining shells. Nuts and bolts, she swore to herself. What's the matter with you, Rose? They aren't even bombs. They're full of protein snacks and antiseptic wipes. But of course there was ammunition in there too, and they still looked like bombs. For a moment, Rose couldn't help wishing they were all MagnoCharge explosives after all, and that they were going to be used in a real attack. Something that would stop the First Order once and for all. Rose waved up at the bombardier. Hey, Nyx. Paige said to give you a poke. Nyx was sitting by his computer pedestal with his legs swinging over the edge of the opening to the bomb bay, running a last count of the active racks from the handheld remote detonator. Nyx raised his head and nodded in reply to Rose, but he didn't answer or let go of the remote. Rose knew he was doing his usual careful tally of the shells before he activated their release. 5 minutes to entry, Rose warned him. Don't lose count now. Nyx nodded again without a word. He was always totally focused on the mission. Rose thought it was probably his way of coping with the lurking coil of fear. Everybody coped with it differently. Rose reached the upper deck and went to check on Spenny, the new tail gunner. They'd managed to fill out each bomber with a full crew of 5 for this hop, which would free up the flight engineer to keep an eye on the power bafflers. Hammer's crew had flown with Spenny once or twice before as a tail gunner. Enough that they all knew she spent her time in hyperspace listening to Coruscant space race broadcasts, mostly recorded 100 years before. Rose squeezed past the grotesque hulk of the baffler and bent down into the tail turret. There, Spenny sat, wrapped in her own dream world, pretending she was speeding across the solar system in a sleek solar yacht of a bygone age. Rose tapped on Spenny's headset. Paige said, Rose cut herself short. In her head, she heard Reeve Panzora accusing her. You don't do anything without making sure it's okay with Paige. She sounded just as childish as Reeve going on about what his grandmother had told him to do. I'm here with your 3-minute warning, Spenny, Rose amended. Thanks. The tail gunner reached up to change channels with one hand, and with the other began the unlocking sequence for her guns. Seal me in, okay? I'm on it. Rose ducked back out to the main deck and closed the shield door to the tail gunner's turret.
Tech, take your station.
Finch Dallow's voice in her headset was sharp. He was playing the professional pilot for once.
Navi computers ready for re-entry. Expect the unexpected.
Chapter 10 Rose glanced at her chrono. She'd been 1 minute too long on the ladder through the bomb racks, staring at those ominous black canisters. Now she wriggled her way back around the baffler and sprinted across the flight deck, her boots clattering hollowly over the hard-used panels. She took her seat at the flight engineer's console. Her job on this trip was going to be considerably more nerve-wracking than it had been on the first bombing run to Atera, with the spy droids. This time, instead of just monitoring her own ship, She was responsible for overseeing all 6 of the mission squadron's power bafflers. Rose barely had time to get her retaining straps fastened before Hammer was out of hyperspace and cruising in the clear space on the far side of the Atera belt. Before Rose knew it, Finch had covered the distance between re-entry and the asteroids, and then Hammer began dodging and hiding in Atera's rock-filled space maze. Rose looked at her screen. If the power bafflers were all working, they'd hide the energy trace from the bombers. That meant Rose would see the star fortresses as outlines on her screen, only able to see them fully if they were in her own ship's line of sight. At the tech station, Rose had no actual view of what was going on outside the ship. All she could see were the outlined asteroids of the belt. She scanned the screen, searching for an outline in the awkward pistol shape of a resistance star fortress. The bombers only oriented themselves all in the same position when they were flying in formation, so they might appear anyway up on her screen during this run, making the shapes themselves hard to spot. It was a bit like doing one of those visual puzzles Paige had liked so much when they were kids, finding the outlines of off-world animals among a big jumble of abstract shapes. Big animals, these heavy bombers, Rose thought, letting herself smile. Probably the closest thing to a Fathier that Paige or I will ever get to ride on. Then Rose spotted another ship from Cobalt Squadron. It was a little behind the bomber Hammer, following the same path into Atera Bravo's orbit, skirting the edge of one of the Atera Belt's asteroids. Paige called up from the lower ball turret, where she was facing rearward. She'd seen the other Star Fortress too. One of ours behind us, Finch.
Cobalt Squadron and Crimson support ships, check in.
Rose heard Finch command over the comm system. She couldn't hear the responses, but she heard Finch acknowledging each. None was very far away from Hammer.
Sorry to hear about that, Cobalt Mare,
Rose heard Finch say.
Which of these lumps of rock had the automatic cannon?
In another few seconds, Finch read back a number for Rose to log.
Mare got fired at,
Finch explained.
No damage. Listen, kids, we can't regroup in the belt, and if we trigger any more of those automatic cannons, we're going to attract attention. Let's head straight for Atera, form up, drop, and get out of here as fast as we can. We'll come in on the dark side. The dark side?
Nick snorted with laughter.
Are we turning to evil? The night side, you idiot. Of the planet.
They made their way across the Atera belt to the open space within its giant ring. Ahead of them, Atera Bravo glowed bravely on Rose's screen. Bright, barren, bleak, and ruined. After the cold, familiar dark of Refnu, Rose was reminded again how hard on her eyes she'd found the brightness of an inner planet when she'd first escaped her twilight home on Haze Minor back in ruined Automach. Somewhere on the other side of the sun, she knew, was Atera Bravo's sister, Atera Alpha. No one could ever see both worlds at once. In the same way, somewhere far below in the bomber Hammer, Rose knew, was her own sister. All our bombers are out of the belt, Rose reported, as the gold traces appeared and began to converge on her monitor. Welcome to Atera, everybody.
Cobalt Squadron, Crimson support ships, join formation and proceed to drop point,
she heard Finch command.
Follow me. As far as I know, we're coming in between mine zones, but keep a good lookout. And watch for bandits.
The warning had been to alert the other bombers, but Hammer's crew took it personally.
Looking,
came Paige's voice, and then Spenny's voice from the tailgun turret echoed.
Looking.
In the back of her mind, Rose remembered how the TIE fighters had appeared on her monitor, sparks of twinkling white heat like shooting stars. Scanning the monitor, she thought that there was nothing in the galaxy she dreaded as much as the anticipation of seeing those searing handfuls of glitter suddenly appear on screen.
Empty sky, Nix,
said the pilot to the bombardier.
We might get a straight run. Entering atmosphere. Drop in 10. Copy,
said Nix. Rose knew that silence from the flight engineer was considered good news, so she didn't say anything. She sat tense and aching with her eyes glued to the screen. She watched as the image of the world grew vastly closer in the monitor, until the bombers were so close to Atera Bravo that she couldn't see its spherical outline anymore. Before her eyes, the planet rapidly changed from a distant world into a shadowy landscape. From space, Atera Bravo had glowed in the reflected light of its sun. But on its nighttime surface, all was dark. Rose had noticed that even in the perpetual twilight of Refnu, there was always some pinpoint of light beckoning through the gloom. Landing lights on the wharfs, beacon signals along the ground routes between the mines, warning lights on top of cranes and other obstacles to sky traffic. Refnu was too far from its sun for its surfaces to glitter. But even in a world where there were no windows, unless the surface was obliterated by cloud, there was always some small flame of life glowing to guide a flight crew into land. As Hammer approached a Terra Bravo, Rose knew that the sky outside was full of starlight. But on her screen, the surface of the besieged planet was dead with darkness. The first drop zone was in a steep depression 3 kilometers across. It could have been an open mine or a bomb crater. From looking at her screen, it was impossible to tell which. An empty shell of a city loomed around it in the darkness, with mining rigs snapped off and tossed down the slopes of the crater. There was no light in any window, no sign of life among the towering ruins. Rose knew there was life down there. She'd seen it herself. She'd met the people who were struggling to keep this planet from going under. Somewhere below her, Reeve Panzora was looking up at the sky with his frightened young heart full of desperate determination. But from above, it didn't look as if a Terra Bravo had any chance of survival. "We're their hope," Rose reminded herself. "Cobalt Squadron is why they're looking up at the sky. They know we're coming, and they're waiting for us." Rose watched the outlines of the other star fortresses, now lined up in formation on her screen, all of them speeding toward the lightless drop point on a Terra Bravo.
"Drop point in 5,
came Finch's terse update.
"Copy,"
Nix repeated. The bomber Hammer swooped lower over the target. Rose imagined what Paige and Spenny must be seeing, crammed in their crystal spheres behind the laser cannons and nervously watching the brilliant asteroid-littered sky behind them. That was where an attack was most likely to come from.
"They don't use lights at night," Paige said.
They were close enough to the planet that Rose knew her sister could see it through the clear panes beneath her feet. She, too, had noticed the unnatural darkness of a Terra Bravo.
"I guess the First Order would dive in for a recruitment sweep the second they spotted a sign of life here. Not to mention resistance. Quit chatting, kids, the sky's clear,"
said Finch.
"Here we go. Nix, you ready with those bomb bay doors?"
Suddenly, on Rose's screen, one of the glowing gold Star Fortress outlines on the port side of the formation flickered and flashed solid features. Rose caught her breath before speaking. She didn't want to worry anyone unnecessarily. But then it happened again, and she could see the other bomber clearly on the screen, fully visible as a power source burning energy. Rose swallowed. She could hardly speak around the lump of dread in her throat.
"Treasure's Baffler.
Cobalt Treasure's Baffler is down," she managed to croak.
"You'd better break the bad news to them, Finch,"
she added miserably. "I'm sorry."
"Cobalt Treasure, it's Cobalt Hammer here. We're holding for you. Go on in first."
Hammer's crew could hear the command Finch gave.
"Then get out as fast as you can and don't hang around for the rest of us."
It wasn't too different from the original plan. Hammer had intended to lead the way, with the other bombers following. Each Star Fortress was supposed to make its own way back without waiting for the others, except for Hammer. Hammer would watch to make sure the drop went according to plan. That way Rose would be around to give advice in case of a power baffler failure. She really hadn't expected that failure to happen so early in the game. Rose watched her screen. She could see the outline of her own ship falling back behind the others to let the vulnerable one go first, to give them a chance to make their drop as quickly as possible and streak away for the safety of hyperspace. Rose swallowed again. Then she took a deep breath. "Finch, patch me into Treasure's flight engineer," she said. She had her own general comm so she could talk to all the other Star Fortress technicians at once, but she wanted a private link to Kat. She heard her pilot punching in the sequence. The seconds ticked by. Rose couldn't believe how time suddenly seemed to crawl during the minutes it took them to approach the target, especially now that one of the Resistance bombers was visible to the entire solar system of Aterra, if anyone happened to be watching.
"Treasure Tech, it's Rose here," Rose said. "Your baffler's spewing power. Can I help?"
Kat, the technician from Refnu, didn't answer right away. Rose could hear him breathing hard. She could feel her own breath choking her as she waited, a feeling of panic.
"Take another deep breath, Rose."
Through Rose's headset came Paige's calm voice, as though her sister were speaking right beside her, telling her what to do.
Take a deep breath, then prompt him.
Rose breathed deep. She tried to imagine Kat, with his large Nephrian build, crammed inside the cone of the treasure's power baffler. What would he be looking at?